Everything is real. I'm Natalie D.
I'm Drew Toothpaste.
And today we are going to discuss how April was pretty weird.
We'll see how weird April was. I hope your April was good. Mine was fine.
Mine was fine.
Can't ask for more. A 30-day month, they're shorter. Gives us less time to find weird things and less time for weird things to happen.
I like the 31-day months myself, personally.
When I think of a month, you know, I think of 30 days, not because of the rhyme about half September and all that, but the 31-day months, you really feel like you're getting something extra. They started selling Diet Coke in these packs that said 15-pack, and then in really large letters on the side, it said, that's three more than 12.
It's true, though.
That's how I feel. All the 31-day months, August.
Yeah.
January.
Yeah.
Let's go. That's great. Bonus days.
In the Discord, one of our lovely Discordians was talking about the Gregorian calendar and how it fucks everything up. I'm of a mind, like, gradually as time progresses and I get fully into my bullshit, I think I'm getting closer and closer to abandoning the Gregorian calendar. It just doesn't make sense. I feel like it is shackles that is put upon us by society that is removing us from the natural order of the world.
I think that's true. I would be interested to hear how you can free yourself from them.
Right. I mean, I think it just depends on the way you organize yourself, right? It's your own business, right? You can't force other people to be on your weird calendar. Like, you have to, like, synchronize with other people, but...
Right. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of is really, you know, if somebody says, do you want to do something on Sunday? And you're like, do you mean French fry 8?
Well, think about it. So, like, you should have 28 days in every month. Right. That makes it so the moon stuff makes sense, right?
Yeah.
You don't end up having two moons in a month. Weird shit like that, right? You don't end up having all of these months with alternating days. Like, that shit's whack. Also, like, I've been thinking lately about not having my new year be on January 1st and have it be, like, March 19th or March 20th. Like, the beginning of the astrological year when Aries starts.
I mean, the lunar new year has always made more sense to me because, you know, first of all, I think off the dome, probably more people celebrate lunar new year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or a significant number of people do. If, you know, a third of the people in the world celebrate that, then it's a pretty major option. It's not like getting one of those keyboards where the letters are in the wrong place and claiming that it's more efficient.
Right. Well, also think about this, okay? So, like, I think that you should have your year start at the end of March, like when Aries starts, which is usually like March 20th, something like that, right? If you have your year start then, that is a much better time of the year to, like, attack, like, a new project, right? Like, like, I want to go out and, like, conquer this new year, and I have all these resolutions for things I want to do. It's pretty hard to do all that kind of stuff in January. Like, the first day of January, like, coming out of, like, the two-week cookie fest of the holidays, and it is fucking cold, and it's overcast, and it's getting dark at 3:30. That is not the time of the year when you're trying to, like, grab it by the horns. But, like, Aries season, like, it's starting to be spring. It is warming up. It is, like, the new astrological year, and you're going into it, like, with Aries energy, which is very, like, active, fiery energy. That is, like, the perfect time to do something like that. Like, if you're going to do any kind of new shit, that is the best time to do it, right?
I think that everybody always goes so loony in the spring, starting in, like, March, you know, as spring sweeps the country from the bottom up.
Right.
We start seeing people in March starting to go loony. They're getting 70, 80 degree days now. Let's ignore what that means for the Earth, but... You know, people just have this intense energy and they're kind of going off the rails, but they're also kind of manic, like in only the ways that are good.
Right. Also think about this. Here's the other thing I was thinking about when it comes to this like lunar year, astrological year stuff. When does the government want you to do the taxes? April 15th.
If you
had the year ending on March 20th around that time, which makes perfect sense, then you had a month to wrap up your finances and send them into the government. Sounds to me like the government's already working on that calendar and they're just not sharing it with us. Why would you stop the fiscal year in January and then have people sit on their receipts for 4 months before they do anything with them?
If you want to know what's happening in the world, watch the people with the money. And the Internal Revenue Service is literally the guys with the money.
Mm-hmm. And they want to see your receipts in April, because to them, that is the end of the previous year.
I like government-based lunar calendars based on our conspiracies on what the money in the banking system is doing.
I know literally nothing about finances and stuff, so anything I have to say about banking is literally pulled out of my ass. But I will say, I have a sneaking suspicion that some people are out there using different calendars and just not telling you because they want the power for themselves.
Oh, they are. I heard that rappers get into all kinds of stuff these days.
I heard that Beyonce was a witch.
I have heard a lot of things about different rappers lately, and I don't know if they're working this up themselves because they seem to get a lot of press.
Yeah, yeah. I heard that Beyonce is a witch and she does candle magic, which is pretty like entry level shit. So I'm not too afraid of Beyonce.
What's candle magic? Is that like the craft?
Kind of. It's like you're like, oh, I want so-and-so to be in love with me. And then you'll go out and you'll buy like a pink candle.
Okay.
And then you will like carve a bunch of words into it with like a needle stylus or something like that, right? And then you'll rub herbs on it, like correspondent herbs, like rose petals, like Venus bullshit, right?
Okay.
And then you'll put some oils on it and rub some like love oils on the candle. And then you like light the candle and like meditate about it and whatever the hell. I don't do candle magic. That's what I've picked up just like reading about other people's shit. But apparently that's how Beyonce runs her shit. She's okay. Doing candle magic. The person who said that she was doing candle magic said that she was a witch and she was doing candle magic, but also in the same breath was like, she is very like entry level. She is like not a powerful mage. She's just dabbling.
That seems like the start of a diss track.
Yeah.
Beyonce is not a powerful mage.
She's a TikTok witch.
Oh my. If we can get those lines to rhyme. We're getting press from that one.
From Beyonce. Now,
speaking of the press, we had a few things happen this April, the previous month.
Right, we did.
Top of the list, Natalie, what do we have?
So the thing I thought was most noteworthy this month was this thing that I read about called the New York Declaration on Animal Consciousness that was signed by nearly 40 researchers who study like biology, I guess, right? And they had this conference at New York University, and all of these researchers signed this document that said that there is strong scientific report that birds and mammals are conscious, with a realistic possibility that all vertebrates are conscious, including reptiles, amphibians, and fish, and the possibility would also extend to creatures without backbones, such as insects and crustaceans and mollusks and squid and et cetera, et cetera.
So really, researchers are sort of coming around to the most obvious conclusion.
Right.
Which is that animals are conscious. Now, we've talked about this before, and this reminds me of one of my favorite metaphors, which is this PETA billboard. PETA, of course, I don't want to get into that. They had a billboard that had a cat on one end and like a cow and a chicken on the other, and it says, where do you draw the line between pets and food? And of course, you know, the picture went online and everybody drew their line. They got on MS Paint or on their phone and they put the line where they thought it should be. And there's several animals, you know, fish, and there's a dog and a horse and stuff on there. The horse is always the transition point, really.
Right.
Honestly, you can eat them, but people don't like that.
Right.
So really, it turned into a discussion on horse.
Right.
But biologists love to do this thing where they're like, the mice underwent stimuli.
Yeah. It's responding to stimulus.
Well, first of all, responding to stimuli is something I love.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I love to have stimuli and just not respond. Just watch the stimuli. That's good, too.
Uh-huh.
However, implying that other animals do not have a conscious, subjective experience in their lives is a way to assert, really, this human superiority.
Right.
And I think it really underlies what a lot of the ruling class wants, which is this sort of manifest destiny when it comes to the planet itself.
Mm-hmm.
Not just putting a highway through a poor neighborhood.
Right.
Not just taking land from the Native Americans, but actually saying, no, this is our Earth and we're allowed to do whatever the fuck we want. We can mine it. We can drill for oil. We can frack. We can make the sea levels go up.
Right, right.
And it seems obvious to me that other species of animal are conscious. And as soon as you start thinking about it, it's obvious that everything alive is conscious.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Where do you draw the line?
With consciousness? I'm not the one to ask with that. I think my computer's conscious.
No, I mean,
hey,
it's
little
a,
guy!
It's a rhetorical question, right. Because once you start thinking about it, you really can't draw the line. The obvious next step down the ladder is your dog. Is your dog conscious?
Yes.
If you don't think your dog is conscious in having subjective experiences, if you don't think, and when I say subjective, I mean philosophers have this idea of the philosophical zombie, which is a person who goes about their life and does everything they do and goes to their job and drives around and goes to the store, like in the Devo song, and doesn't have any subjective emotions or feelings or thought about what they're doing. A philosophical zombie would look at a green billboard and they might say, I have just perceived a green billboard. They would not say green is my favorite color, or they would not say I hate green, or I hate that green, the color I love, is being used by an advertising company.
Uh-huh.
So to imagine then that a cat or a dog is this sort of zombie.
You know a cat is conscious. Anybody who owns a cat knows that your cat is conscious. Do I like cats? No, not much. But if someone has a cat, I know cats well enough to know if someone has a cat, they will go and be like, oh, my fluffy schnookums, my favorite cat. She loves chicken cat food. I'm going to go out and buy her a case of it. And you go out and buy her a case of the cat food. And she's like, I'm tired of it. So she expressed her preferences to you clearly enough that you went out of your way to make sure you're catering to her preferences.
Uh-huh.
And then she changed her mind. And she's like, fuck off.
If you can change your mind, you can have a subjective experience.
Right. So the story with this thing here is that there were these scientists and they were doing studies on this fish called a cleaner wrasse.
Uh-huh.
And they were doing this experiment where these fish were in a tank that had a mirror in the tank. And the mirror was covered up. And they removed the cover. And at first, the fish were like, what the fuck? And like a whole bunch of the fish were like attacking the mirror and like flipping out. Like, oh my God, look at all those other fish that just showed up. But then after a few days, they started kind of settling down. And it was like they understood what was going on with the mirror. And the fish started doing weird shit, like swimming by it upside down, which they had never seen those fish doing at all. Like, it was a completely novel thing where they're like, and they're like interacting with the mirror in totally novel ways, right? At one point, the scientists took like a marker and put a brown splotch on one of the fish to make it look like the fish had a parasite. And the fish were like looking in the mirror and trying to get it rubbed off. Like, they could see it and they recognized it was their body and they were trying to do something about the spot that they saw.
Uh-huh.
So obviously these fish were conscious and they were learning about their surroundings and they were interacting with them and they were using the mirror as a tool to perceive themselves. And they understood what they were doing.
So the fish saw that it had a spot on its side, and then it decided to try to rub itself on objects to try to get whatever was off its side. It probably did not have any sort of tactile sensation because, you know, if you get ink on your hand, it doesn't feel like anything.
Right.
This is really tough for scientists because a lot of scientists, not just biologists, but people who do pharmaceutical work, people who do work on epidemiology, they don't think anything of essentially torturing animals.
You know, well, okay, so this is what I was leading to. I wanted to progress the story because I wanted to tell about this video I saw.
Okay.
Where there was this guy who was talking about his wife.
Yeah.
This guy obviously did not think his wife was conscious. He did not think his wife contained consciousness in the way that a man does.
Okay,
and the way he was talking about her was crazy.
Okay, hold on. So So what was the context? So a guy was talking about his wife, and, you know, this is like incel behavior. This is how incels talk about women.
Right. Well, he was talking about his wife, and he was like, you know, we got married, and I didn't really think that she was capable of rational thought. But then, after we had been married for 10 years or something, it finally, like, clicked with me. And I was like, oh, she's right about stuff a lot. She must actually be able to, like, think about stuff in a way that is rational. It took him 10 years to figure out his wife was conscious.
I always wonder about what people do when they go home and they're talking to their spouse. Apparently, some of them, at least one, just assumes the other person is not having any thoughts or emotions.
Why would you get into a legally binding contract with a person who you thought was incapable of rational thought? I hate men. Not you. Other ones. I'm so fucking tired of trying to convince men that I'm a human being. It's just like, fuck them. Not you. You're nice. You're a nice one. You always treat me like a human being, but guys just really don't. The other thing I wanted to talk about was that I saw this other video where this guy was saving a turtle, right? And he was in a boat, and there was this sea turtle in the ocean, and it was getting attacked by a shark. And the shark was, like, right there, and it kept on getting the turtle's ass in his mouth. And the guy was watching this turtle get attacked, and the turtle was trying to get to the boat. Like, he was, like, distressed. And the guy's like, I'm gonna get this fucking turtle, right?
Yeah.
And so he waited until he could reach the turtle, and he grabbed it, and he put it in the boat. And then he's like, I just drove the boat, like, 20 miles away from where we were, and then I let him back out. So he was, like, out of the way of the shark. And when he put the turtle in the water, the turtle was so grateful that the turtle swam off into the distance and found a jellyfish, which obviously the turtle really liked it. Like, he really likes eating jellyfish. And he brought this jellyfish back to this guy and was sharing it with him. You tell me that the fucking turtle isn't conscious. Like, he was like, I owe this guy so much because he just saved me from the shark. I'm going to do something nice for this guy. That is, like, very high level thought processes for a reptile.
And it's something that people like to do is say, well, the reptile, when it feels as though it is cold, it will seek heat. No, the animal feels cold. It subjectively is cold and goes, damn, it's cold in here.
Right, right.
I'm going to go sit on that hot rock. That hot rock feels good. Feels. Uh-huh. Here's another crazy thing. And we've talked about this before. Some researchers did an experiment with crows. And crows are, from what we can tell, one of the smarter birds.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a question people have, which is, are crows capable of talking to people? Crows are very smart, and you'll always hear these stories of crows where, you know, somebody will bring a crow food, and a crow in an urban environment sees enough people with money and giving money to each other and money trading hands that the crow will bring dollar bills, will bring currency to a person.
Uh-huh.
In exchange for food. Sometimes crows figure out that people really like cigarettes, so they'll bring them cigarettes.
Uh-huh.
So crows have understood that these items have value for humans, and they understand the semantics of an exchange relationship, which there are people who don't understand this.
Yeah.
Or at least if they understand it, they choose not to reciprocate. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So crows can recognize people. However they're wired, they can recognize people's faces quite readily. If somebody puts on a different outfit and a different hat, they can still recognize the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something that happened. A guy goes out, and I don't remember off the dome if he had a special mask on, because they like to wear special masks when they interact with crows. Because if you
make a crow mad, you want to be able to reset it.
Yes. Okay, and this will be clear later. So this guy wears this funky mask. He goes out looking like Jigsaw or Rorschach or
whatever the fuck, right?
Whatever is notable to a crow, and he goes, oh, and he runs around and he yells at the crows. He runs around and yells at the crows, maybe throws some Dixie cups at him or something. I don't know. I don't know how you make crows mad. But he made the crows mad, and it was in this one little area. He goes somewhere, and they know these crows, okay? The crows are, like, tracked. they know which ones are which. He goes, and this was like weeks later, he goes and he takes his mask out to do another experiment in a different part of the city. And the crows see him and they just start cawing and they fly off. The crows knew of him. And the crows were like, fuck you. I know what you do. You throw Dixie cups at crows.
Yeah. So they're communicating with each other and telling each other very specific shit.
Yes. So, again, when you watch Wild Kingdom or National Geographic or David Attenborough, it's like an animal makes an alert sound. Like, they're not communicating very much with this, but the crows somehow managed to communicate with each other about someone that wasn't there. What that means is that the crows have used abstraction to describe a person. And the description of that person could be taken by a second group, interpreted, and used to say, hey, there's that guy that looks like Jigsaw from Saw. He's going to throw cups at us.
Right, right.
What this means is either crows can talk and we have never heard it, which is...
Well, they can probably talk and we don't understand their language. It's because it sounds like crows.
Which is possible. It's possible that they may have a sequential abstract language. Mm-hmm. The other possibility, which is far more interesting, is that we've never heard crows talk to each other. We've never heard crows use a sequential language. Mm-hmm. Crows may be telepathic.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's possible that all animals on this planet, except for us, are telepathic.
And this would explain emergent behavior of large groups of animals. This would explain why a crow can hate a guy he's never seen. Mm-hmm. This could explain a lot of animal behavior, and it's something that we never even consider as a possibility because as humans, the dominant species on this planet, we consider ourselves to necessarily be the best and brightest.
Right.
And so if we can't do it, nobody can, right?
Right, right. I mean, I think the idea that all of the animals are telepathic is very interesting, and what it makes me immediately think about is like, what if the story from the Bible about the Tower of Babel was about humans losing their telepathic abilities?
It sounds like it. All we've got is this horrible language that we have to teach each other, and then we have to wade through.
Right, and everyone speaks a different language. All the different countries speak a different language. Even speaking English, like, there are things that I think about or that I read about that I wouldn't be able to communicate with you effectively using human language, because it is about stuff that is like indescribable, right? There are things that are indescribable, and if human language was the best tool for the job, we wouldn't have that problem.
We have to encode our thoughts in an abstract form. And so it seems obvious from that it could be hard to encode things, especially subjectivity, into this abstract form. Our language, you know, we can write poetry, we can write about our feelings and emotions, but this is why it can be so hard to communicate, because you have to take something ineffable and cram it into, you know, a certain number of letters and words that you have to say in the right order. And if you find a word that works really well and has a particular meaning for you, you may say it and it either has a different meaning for somebody else or they just don't know what the word means.
Right. One of the things that this article I read about these animals being conscious that I thought was a experiment that seemed a little funny. You know, how funny, but you know, it was pretty funny. So they had this experiment where they were doing a study on crayfish, and they had all these crayfish in a tank, and they had the tank rigged up so they could shock the crayfish, which is a very normal thing to want to do. And so they were electrocuting these crayfish. And then the crayfish, after they were electrocuted a few times, started having, like, behavioral effects. Like, they were obviously stressed out about it.
Yeah.
And they were like, ah! And then they started giving the crayfish anti-anxiety drugs, and the crayfish started acting normal again. So it was basically like they gave the crayfish anxiety. The crayfish were afraid of what was going to happen to them, and it was affecting their behavior. And so when they gave them, like, the Xanny bar, they were totally fine.
This is really funny, but what's funniest about this is that the researchers were surprised. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the most interesting fields that's tied to this is the idea of plant consciousness. Mm-mm. Plants have much of the same neurotransmitters and signaling and pathways that we do.
Mm-hmm.
You can give anesthetic to a plant so it doesn't feel pain. And it prevents the plant from having what biologists would call a stress reaction yeah. to having one of its limbs cut off.
Right. I also have stress reactions when you cut my limbs off.
Right. A Xanny bar would help. And so we're really working backwards. And science is funny this way because after you really hammer something into our model we've got going and you really determine, you know, using data and experiments and repeated experiments and measurements and all this, you look backwards and you say, it's crazy we didn't know this. It's crazy we thought that everything revolved around the Earth. But scientists at least are coming forward and being like, hey, guys.
Well, here's the thing is that, you know, you're talking at the beginning about like these kind of Christian ideas. You didn't say it so much, but you were describing this idea of manifest destiny, which kind of lines up with this concept that a lot of fundamentalists have where they believe that Earth was given to humanity by God in order to pillage as much as they wanted. And like all of the dirt is theirs. All of the animals belong to them. All of the fish belong to them. All of the natural resources underneath the crust of the Earth belong to them. And it is their job to milk it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
But to me, when I think about scientists who, for some reason, don't believe that animals have consciousness, to me, that idea is more in line with that fundamentalist pillage mentality where they're like, oh, the animals are simply protein for me. They are not bestowed with the fucking soul of a god man, right? And so, like, to me, it is strange for scientists who have, like, very atheistic ideas to then think that animals aren't conscious. So why are you conscious if there's no God? Why are you special and you have the consciousness to study animals if there's no God? Because to me, the mental leap I would make would be that, well, I am an organism living on Earth and there's nothing special about me. And then all the other organisms also live on Earth. So I would hazard to guess that they have the same kind of shit going on than I do.
Absolutely. And, you know, the more we learn about animals, it is absolutely ridiculous where people are like, did you know that crows can use tools? Yeah, a crow can pick up a stick and do something with it. Yes, just as you or I could.
I saw an article recently about an orangutan who had a fucking boo-boo on his face and he found some plant that had antiseptic and pain-relieving qualities, and he sat there for like a half an hour chewing it up into a pulp and like rubbing it into his boo-boo and like spitting the juice out and rubbing it on his stuff, and then his shit healed up. If a fucking orangutan knows about herbal medicine, not special. The herbal medicine, we're gonna have to fucking do an episode about that shit. I'm very up in arms about the pharma industry lately. I have ideas about that shit. I'm not gonna get into it right now.
Well, I'm glad you pointed it out. There is a huge issue with the idea that consciousness is just a fluke and an emergent property from the complexity of only the human brain, which also begs the question, when did people become conscious? Because it means that the little guys lumbering around, you know, flaking rocks, trying to make sharp rocks from regular rocks.
Mm-hmm.
That they were not conscious at some point and then became conscious. The idea that you can draw the line like on the billboard somewhere and just say, this little guy here, he was not upright enough. His skull wasn't big enough. So therefore, I don't think he was conscious. And then finally, at this point, after the Neanderthals, now we're conscious. Now we can invent Slurpees in pharmaceuticals.
And plastic.
So the last thing I just want to talk about this because several months ago we did an episode on panpsychism, which is the idea that everything is conscious. Sounds crazy. You got to listen to the episode. We stepped through it. It's actually a lot less crazy than you would think. But I went through a STEM education. Lots of people do, and you get taught a lot of this stuff by rote.
Mm-hmm.
You get taught first that electrons, neutrons, and protons are essentially bouncing balls, which is fine. It's cute, right?
Uh-huh.
And then They say, well, the electron orbits around. Well, where does it go? Well, there's some certain electrons that have certain energy levels are more likely to be found in certain areas. Mm-hmm. And they construct these ideas called orbitals. There's one that's donut shaped. There are some that are teardrop shaped. And they are at these certain distances and in certain planes from the nucleus of an atom, mm-hmm. right? And it occurred to me, we're talking about this and thinking about this and researching this, they say, well, the electron is more likely to be here. One of the paradigm shifts that has happened in philosophy and consciousness research in the past decade is the idea that everything is conscious and that, in fact, consciousness is the basis of reality. Mm-hmm. It follows from that an electron doesn't just tend to be in a certain place and tend to go a certain speed. The electron prefers to be there. And when you think about that, it suddenly makes a lot more fucking sense. The electron doesn't have to have complex thoughts. It just wants to be there.
Right.
It feels good when it's there, and so it is there. That's not a metaphor. That is literally the consciousness of a fundamental particle.
Right.
I have a lot of thoughts on this. If you haven't subscribed yet, patreon.com/garbagebrainuniversity. You can listen to our episode on plant consciousness. You can listen to our episode on panpsychism. And I'm sure we're going to do more about this.
We talk about consciousness all the time because it's fascinating. It really is fascinating.
I'm a conscious guy.
you are.
My consciousness is always wanting to talk about itself.
Right. The other thing I wanted to talk about was this study from the University of Portsmouth and this scientist by the name of Melvin Vopson. And our boy Melvin believes that he has evidence of simulation theory. And he has evidence that we are living in a simulation.
Now, you know that I think simulation theory is very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like part of me doesn't like it. And I'm like, no, I don't like that. Part of me is like, you know, what would it change? I don't think it would change anything.
So philosophically, if the whole universe is inside a simulation, it doesn't really change anything. It doesn't change anything about our scientific models. It doesn't change anything about who we are or what happens. It's very funny, though, to see people who have a sort of Neil Tyson view on the world talk about being in a system designed by a divine being that's greater than they can comprehend, who they'll never meet.
Right, right. What's the difference between living in a universe that was created by a god and living in a simulation that was created by who we perceive to be a god? And there have been people who've talked about, like, alien shit and talked about, like, how the aliens are also trying to figure out who's running the simulation.
That seems possible to me. You know, a lot of people hear, you know, Rick and Morty type guys, Elon Musk type guys talking about simulation theory, and they have the absolute worst ideas about it, and they believe that it sort of reinforces their worldview or makes them think they're in the Matrix or something. I'm not really sure what any of them get out of it, because it's really the statistical side of it that appeals to me. But what Vopson says here is he comes up with his whole theory of something called infodynamics, right?
Right, right.
There's a paper on it. We'll link to it in the Discord if you're interested. And he goes on and on. But essentially, he posits that there's something called negentropy, the opposite of entropy, mm-hmm. whether it's an opposing force to entropy or whether both of these terms are describing something that's happening that we don't quite have in our model yet. It was very interesting. But one of the problems in thermodynamics is that you've heard of the second law of thermodynamics. The entropy in a system will always increase.
Yeah.
And so if you ask a thermodynamics professor, what happens in the year 100 million? What happens in the year 100 billion? Eventually they'll say the heat death of the universe. Mm-hmm. Everything will just essentially cool because it will come to a point of maximum entropy, and then the theory is that it will undergo a point of inflection and collapse back and have a big bang again. Mm-hmm. That's the best guess. You just have to guess. Nobody was there.
Right.
Well, what he posits is that there's actually a separate force that induces systems to become self-organizing. Typically in thermodynamics, you have to do a little workaround and you say, well, why does a human body repair itself? Why do plants collect elements from the environment and turn them into this highly organized, low entropy being of a maple tree, mm-hmm. right? In thermodynamics, you kind of have to draw dotted lines around it and say, well, it's because once the tree is created, it will generate more entropy than if it had been these base elements or whatever. If you create a person with it, obviously the person will ruin the earth.
Right.
High entropy operation from the guy.
Right.
He basically says, well, there's actually a separate force that creates self-organizing systems. Now, his argument rests on the idea that if we're in a simulation, if we are in a big game of Grand Theft Auto 6,
uh-huh.
8, whatever, you know, that in order for something as large and complex as our universe to be run as a simulation, we would have to have data compression and optimization happening in our universe. And he argues that the symmetry and repetition you see in the natural world is evidence of this.
Right, right. Wasn't he saying there was some kind of stuff with our genome also that made it seem like there was data compression going on at a genetic level as well?
Yes, and he looked into the human genome and found that it had signatures when you look at the data, and this is a very surface-level analysis, and it needs to be gone into more, but nobody's really looked at it much before. He kind of looked at the genome and said it looks like a fucking zip file.
Right. And you had pointed out earlier today when we were talking about this that simply having all of the animals on the planet be symmetrical in some way cuts down on the amount of data that is contained within them.
Absolutely. One of the examples he gave was a starfish. Now, apart from the middle of the starfish, you basically need one arm, and then you just do the same arm.
Uh-huh.
You look at an octopus. Octopuses are conscious, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this also. An octopus has 8 individual arms, and each arm is basically the same.
Mm-hmm.
Human beings have bilateral symmetry. So the left side is the same as the right side of your body in almost every respect.
Right.
If you were to encode a human body in the way that you would encode something in a zip file, you would basically say, here's a leg. Okay, yeah, now just flip that and you get the other leg. Here's an arm. You flip that, you get the other arm.
Uh-huh.
Here's the left parietal lobe. Guess what? Flip it.
Right, right. Guess what, bitch? Right.
And, you know, if you look at how plants grow, you know, they have these stems and nodes, and they have these parts that all plants that are out in the world tend to have the same parts. And they have symmetry at nodes and all this and all that. So it really does bear looking into, even if you don't want to dig into, he makes some arguments based on electron orbitals and the Pauli exclusion principle and all this that are interesting. But really the nutshell is that when you go out and you see repeating patterns and you see symmetry in the natural world, that implies some amount of saving data.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody somewhere saved some disk space by doing that.
Right, right.
All right, so last thing I wanted to talk about today was Mothman. He's back on the scene. He's been showing up in Chicago a lot lately.
Now, they say Mothman portends an accident or some kind of doom when you see him, right?
He's like a harbinger of doom. But, you know, he has been hanging around Chicago so much lately. It's been for a while. And so I'm not sure, like, what he's doing there. Maybe he's retired to Chicago.
Well, I mean, if you spent your whole life in rural West Virginia, maybe you want to switch it up.
Right, right. There was a union official for the United States Postal Service who I believe he was interviewed on a podcast or something, which is why this showed up in the news cycle. But he went on this podcast and said that he saw Mothman in Chicago when he was there for a Postal Service convention. And this was some years ago, but he just came out with his story recently. And he was attending this convention and was on a phone call in the evening because his mom was sick and she got sent to the emergency room. And so she was talking about that with somebody, right? And after that, he was like a little bugged out and he's like, I'm just going to stay awake. I'm waiting here back about my mom, this and that, right? And after he got off the phone, he looked out the window of the hotel where he was and he was on the 8th floor and he saw a large black guy flying around over North Columbus Drive in Chicago. He said that The guy was level with his window, and it was moving between the Fairmount and the building across the street. And he said at first he thought it was a garbage bag, but it was a lot higher in the air than the garbage bag would have been if it was flying around in the sky, right?
Yeah.
He then thought maybe it was like an oversized kite or a drone, but he said it was nighttime and it was not going to be the case because it was black, right? And he kept watching it, and it became apparent to him that it was clearly a dark-colored, 6-foot-tall humanoid with wide wings that was gliding through the sky outside of his room. And he also said that it seemed to be watching a window on the building across the street from him. So someone else had attracted the attention of Mothman, and he saw them.
So is Mothman a voyeur?
I don't know. I don't know. We haven't got that Mothman interview yet. I think that's what his motives are shaky, right?
If you know Mothman.
Right. Have we seen his dick? Moth person.
I think we've got the statue in West Virginia, and everybody likes to look at Mothman's ass.
Right. That's just because people are a lot dumber on average than...
than they would like us to think.
Right.
Is that what you think?
Right, right. Personally, if I went down to West Virginia, I would be checking out all of the actual places where people saw Mothman. I would be going and trying to find the spot where the guy saw Indrid Cold. And I would be going off and doing all that stuff instead of, like, rubbing the statue's butt until it got really, really shiny. That's just me, though. I'm not someone who, like, it's like a statue groper.
Well, maybe Mothman is a huge perv and they're trying to appease him by doing perv activities on his proxy body.
Maybe that's why there hasn't been a disaster in Chicago yet. They're keeping it safe by rubbing the butt in West Virginia.
It's like the guy who types the numbers into Lost.
Yeah, right.
You gotta keep it safe and you'll be fine.
Right. So... how weird did you think April was?
As somebody who thinks a lot, reads a lot about consciousness and panpsychism, and consciousness is a primary, and also has done a lot of writing and thought about thermodynamics, I think April was very interesting to me. From an esoteric standpoint, I don't know that it was particularly weird, but it was satisfying to me. I'll give it a 7.
Okay. All right. I'm going to give it a 3. I thought it was disappointing overall. I mean, no one told me any shit I didn't believe already. I already knew that all the animals are conscious, even the tiny little ones. I already knew that, all that shit. So, I mean, I didn't learn anything this month that I didn't already know in my heart. There were some other things that happened this month that I thought were profoundly boring, like Christopher Mellon rattling on about the same old shit, and Ross Coulthart doing a victory lap and asking for more attention. But, like, none of those had any information that was, like, useful, right? It was all, like, same old shit. I really need some more meat. I would like to see May be the weirdest May we've ever had. And so... I'm going to score this low in hopes that the universe corrects and gives me like a 9 or a 10 next month.
Let's get the veil really thin during May, everyone.
Right, right.
You know who loves it when the veil between this world and the next thins, Natalie?
Plants?
Plants.
I was trying to decide which one was going to be it. It's like, who would be the funniest? Cory Grella, Plants, Harlem Township. I was leaning towards Harlem Township, but we're going to go with Plants.
Well, we just talked about how they're conscious. Clearly, right. They want... a window into what comes next or what came before, perhaps.
Right. They're cool. They're chilling.
I love the idea, the Eastern religious idea of, you know, the big cycle, uh-huh. Learning things, then forgetting it all and coming back. The forgetting part is a real pain in the ass. But I got to think Plants, you know, it's like the baby that says, oh God, please, please Norway, please Norway. And the doctor says, welcome to America. And he goes, God damn it.
Right.
You got to think if you're a plant and you come back and you're like, oh, shit. Oh, I'm back again. The ride continues. What? Oh, I'm lawn grass.
I would love it. I would love to be grass. But you, a tree.
But you know what's great about Plants? Who sponsors Garbage Brain University? Plants, the botanical treat we love to eat. One of the great things about grass, they make a ton of oxygen. Everybody uh-huh. hates lawns. I'm not a lawn boy, but they make a ton of oxygen.
Yeah.
Like pound for pound surface area, they make more than trees. It sucks, but it's true.
Right, right. Yeah, what are you going to do?
Thanks to Plants.
Who loves plants.
Harlem Township.
Yeah, they do. They're covered in them.
Harlem Township is absolutely green and lush, especially this time of year.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And they're located conveniently in central Ohio. If you're near Delaware County, stop into Harlem Township and experience its many delights.
Oh, they have so many delights. You know who the biggest delight is in all of Alaska?
Cori Grella.
Yes, she's there for your insurance needs. The insurance queen.
Cori Grella is the number one life insurance agent in Alaska. If you need life insurance, that's who you go to. It's
right.
Pretty much settled at this
right.
point.
Right, exactly. I mean, if I ever insure myself, that's where I'm going to go.
Oh, I'm going to go to the third best one.
Right.
No, you're not. No. You're not.
Uh-uh. I want to go to the number one insurance agent that is as far away from me as possible. She's as far away as she can get from me while still being in America.
Well, thanks. Thanks again to Plants, Harlem Township, and Cori Grella for sponsoring Garbage Brain University. If you'd like to hear 400 more episodes that you haven't heard yet and join our patron-only Discord, you know where to go, patreon.com/garbagebrainuniversity.
I want to do 900 new episodes, 1,000 episodes.
We're going to keep going as long as you help us, so the Patreon's the way to do that. Thanks again for listening, and remember, everything is real.
I love you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.